This episode is sponsored by Paleo Valley's pasture-raised chicken sticks. I'm super excited to share Paleo Valley's brand new pasture-raised chicken sticks. These chicken sticks are made from 100% pasture-raised chicken and organic spices that are preserved using natural fermentation rather than preservatives. So yes, no fake stuff or additives here. These chicken sticks are sourced from regenerative family farms raised on American pastures, and each stick is free of chemicals, antibiotics, pesticides, and added hormones. Paleo Valley's chicken sticks are a perfect snack packed with 7 grams of protein and, frankly, a great value without skimping on quality. Make sure to support this podcast and head over to paleovalley.com/NWJ and use code NWJ to get 15% off your order. Thanks again for listening and supporting this podcast. Today is a solo episode. I am going to talk to you all about why our mind, body, why our perception, why the way that we view our world, why stressors can actually have an impact on us healing from chronic illness and really stopping us from fully healing. This is not just about nutrition. This podcast is all about wellness. And our practice runs a few groups and they highly recommended that I share this content publicly. So here we are. If you are stuck and you are just not getting better, sometimes working on the mind and body, working on limbic system retraining, and the way we just view the world may be the missing piece for you to get to root cause healing. Hey guys, thanks for joining me today. My name is Judy Cho and I'm board certified in holistic nutrition. And I have a private practice where we focus on root cause healing. And that often starts with the Carnivore Cures All Meat Elimination Diet. Today, I am sharing a little bit of some of the content I have shared in our mind-body program as to why some people are stuck, especially in the way that we view the world, the way that we deal with stressors, and the way that we are just going about our day that may be impacting our abilities to fully heal. So what I'd like to do is share a few slides of a few of the presentations that I have shared over the program. Hopefully it explains to you what really people mean when they're talking about mind body. I know it sounds a little woo-woo, but I try to just explain it in the way that someone will drive to work and then how it's all connected in that purview. So I'm sure by now you've heard a lot about the limbic system. You know, what is that? I know it's part of the brain. It's where we store our emotions. It's our memory center. It affects our feelings, behaviors, reactions, our learning. It also plays a role in the endocrine system and the nervous system. So the endocrine system is that hormonal system. And then the nervous system is really what allows our bodies to just properly function, including digestion, heart rate variability. So what happens with limbic system dysfunction or when things go wrong, we start to have issues with decision-making, maybe our attention, problem-solving. We may get stuck in a longer stress state and we may have emotional dysregulation, which then all of this affects our digestion, which then impacts our immune function. If you look in the limbic system and why this stuff actually matters is it also contains the hypothalamus and it also includes the pituitary gland. If you are hypo or hyperthyroid, have you ever considered, no matter how much medication you use, that you are not able to really balance your thyroid, even if you take a ton of iodine? Sometimes we just have people that cannot manage or balance their thyroid hormones sufficiently. Well, let me bring in a different factor. What if it's structurally that maybe you have some limbic system dysfunction or imbalances that where maybe even structurally the brain itself is imbalanced? So what if it's not a TSH issue or an iodine issue or a hormone issues and you need more carbs or not? But what if it's that your pituitary gland, which releases your TSH, is not doing its job because of a structural issue? These are things that we have to think about, and that how your limbic system being imbalanced can actually impair even your hormonal and metabolic system. So I'm sure many of you have heard about neuroplasticity. It's essentially where we know that the brain can be retrained. It can change and it can recover. We have different ways that we like to do things. And once our brain learns, we start working on autopilot. In our groups, I've brought up a few examples, but two ones that I'll really quickly bring up is the road to work. So when we first learn the road to work, we get really confused of, do we take the freeway or do we take the highway or do we take the back roads? And we try to figure out a way that will best get us to work safely and in the shortest amount of time. So we start pinging our brain to go a certain route, and then we start moving in an autopilot fashion. So we no longer need to think about when we get off the freeway. We just go and we can have conversations. We can do multitasking because we're not really being highly active when we're taking that road to work. And sometimes that's why you're not even thinking about going to work, but you'll accidentally get off the exit that you're supposed to go to work. And it's because, again, your brain is guiding you without you really putting much awareness to it. Neuroplasticity is when you start realizing maybe that road to work is the wrong way. Maybe we need to go a different way that will help me find a different path. And that is what we're doing with neuroplasticity. It is so hard to find a new way to go to work. But if you really try, there is a different way. But over time, as you strengthen the muscle to go the other way, you can find a way to go to work, and that will become the new way. And that is what essentially limbic system retraining is, or using neuroplasticity to help our brains pivot from what it's used to. The other example I shared was getting attacked by a shark in the beach. So imagine that you are an avid swimmer. You like to swim in the beach. Maybe you even like to go boogie boarding or you like to surf. And then one day you get attacked by a shark. Your brain teaches you, or your limbic system remembers that that bad incident happened. And so in order to protect you, it will then say, okay, I need to remember to protect Judy. Let's have fear instilled around the beach area so that Judy will never get attacked again. And that's how our limbic system supports us. But what happens then if I ever want to go back to the beach? But if you think about all the different stressors that are in our lives, maybe we had childhood trauma where our parents divorced, or we were raised by a single parent, or our parents fought all the time, or we didn't even have parents growing up. Maybe we grew up in poverty where things were really hard and you worried about your next meal. There are a lot of things that happen to us when we are young, and we just think it's part of our childhood and it doesn't really affect us. But if you think about the attack at the beach from the shark, what if all these little things that have happened in your life, what if they are the little incidences like the shark attack at the beach, and your limbic system is protecting you? Don't go here. Don't do that. Don't trust this person. Don't trust that. And at a certain point, you're overly protected where you almost become debilitated. And this all really makes sense, especially in context with illness and healing. Now, the shark attack is one incident, and I know it sounds extreme, but I promise you there's a point to that story. But trauma is something, whether it's a person, a moment, an incident, that impacts you. It's really what you internally feel that was a trauma that then your limbic system is now saying, I will protect you. But what if there are so many instances where we can move on from that hardship or that struggle so that we can then live our lives? And so with neuroplasticity, it's really the mind and body's ability to adapt, learn, change, and then grow. Maybe it's saying, okay, I know limbic system, you're trying to protect me from going into the beach because I know you think I'll get attacked by another shark, but I will brave it. And I still want to go into the beach because that is where I thrive. What I really want to share with you is this polyvagal theory. So I know a lot of the stuff that I'm sharing, it's like, okay, so what? What does this have to do with my chronic illness? Our minds and our bodies are one and the same. So maybe we are in a fight or flight now more often because of all the bad trauma we've had as a child. Maybe because we've been in a bad relationship, now we are more scared to date. And so every dating situation or relationship, we start in a fight or flight mode. And this is where it's so important in terms of healing. So if you are in a fight or flight mode, that is your emotional side. And there are these different emotions you see here, such as panic, fear, anxiety, worry, concern, rage, anger, etc. The physical side of this is that when you are in a fight or flight or a sympathetic state, which is part of the limbic system, your digestion is not ideal, which means that your healing will be blunted. Because again, 70 to 80% of your immune system is in your gut, which if your digestion is not working properly, you won't assimilate your nutrients. And then if you're not assimilating nutrients, or you're having leaky gut because of stress, and then if some of that food particles or pathogens are going into the bloodstream where you don't want it to be, well, then your healing will be blunted. This state of mind of fight or flight will then increase your blood pressure. It'll increase your heart rate. your adrenaline, your oxygen circulation to vital organs. It'll increase blood clotting and pupil size. And then what it decreases is fuel storage, digestion, immune response, and insulin activity. So if you think about if our bodies are in a fight or flight state, and it's because our body thinks we will run from an animal or run from the shark or swim away from the shark, then all of the blood is flowing to your limbs so that you can run. So then it's away from digestion and it's away from your immune system. Your body is forcing all of its energy, resources, and nutrients to have you run. But what if you're in a fight or flight state all the time because of what you're perceiving? These are the things that then impact your nervous system and that won't allow you to heal. So can you imagine what you're doing every single day in the state of a fight or flight? And you're eating in that state when all the blood is in your limbs and you are trying to digest your meats. What do you think is really happening to your gut and your immune system? And this is why this whole mind-body stuff matters. And so over time, if you're constantly in this fight or flight, eventually you'll reach the freeze. This is where you start dissociating. Your body is starting to think, I need to shut down because if this person doesn't conserve energy, then they might die. So in this freeze state, your body starts thinking, okay, this person is constantly being chased by the shark or the animal or is constantly in a stress state. So I need to conserve energy so that this person can make it one extra day. Everything starts shutting down. So maybe you start becoming more hypothyroid. Maybe you're always cold no matter how much you eat. Your body is just in this state of duress. There's a complementary theory that's called the cell danger response, where they talk about how cells in your body also do the same thing. So when a cell is even being attacked too often, whether it's pathogen removers, antibiotics, antivirals, but eventually if you are using too many things that are trying to remove from the body or attack the body, the cells also start getting into a freeze state of, I'm going to shut down to conserve energy. They start acting like they're in a cell danger response and they go into hibernation. You want to have the energy, but you don't. You are in a constant state where your vagus nerve is not fully supporting you. And instead your heart rate's up, your blood pressure again, muscle tone, facial expression, everything is in hyper arousal. And then in this state, your heart rate decreases, blood pressure decreases, your temperature decreases. You know, these are all signs of hypothyroid, your muscle tone, facial expression, eye contact, social behavior. You don't want to see anybody. Sexual response, immune response, everything is lowering because again, your body is conserving energy. So whether it's all the way down to the cell structure or you just functioning as a human being, everything is conserving because you've been constantly in this fight or flight, overwhelmed state. And so what ends up happening is you start to increase your fuel storage. So maybe you will gain weight during this period. Insulin activity goes up. And then endorphins start numbing the body so that you don't have to feel anymore. Now, in this theory, this polyvagal theory, they talk about if you look at the white section, the social engagement, this is where you need to be emotionally and physically to then start really healing. So you'll feel joy in this place, be present. You'll have groundedness. You'll have openness, curiosity, compassion, mindfulness. You'll want to connect with others. And then in this place where you are calm, digestion is optimal and healing is possible. This is where your digestion increases. The intestinal mobility is improved. Your resistance to infection improves. Again, if your immune system is mostly in your gut, but your gut is always hurting, can you imagine how well or not well your immune system is doing? It's all related. So if you are in a rested state, you are more primed for healing. So how do you even get into this social engagement space? That is what we teach you in the mind-body program. It's tools like rewiring activities, movement, breathing, social connection, visualization, journaling, doing somatic or body-based therapies, using heart math. We use limbic system retraining as well. There's so many different tools, but it's obviously finding the tools that make sense for you to basically say, no, thank you, limbic system, but no, thank you. I'm going to still go into the beach. No, I'm going to find a different road to work because I know this road is much better than the other road. We also talk about addiction and how a lot of times when our dopamine levels start going lower, we try to hit the addictive tools. And at a certain point, what once used to be cathartic becomes an addiction and it no longer provides the benefit or the dopamine hits that it used to, or it just takes more and it's to a point that it's detrimental for your life. So if you find other tools that will also give you dopamine hits, but just in slower doses, but can actually support you more longevity-wise, those are the tools that we try to teach you in this program. I wanted to give you the example of forgiveness. So I know forgiveness is such a hard topic. We talk a little bit more about it in the program, but oftentimes we say that person ruined my life. But I argue in the program that actually forgiveness is not for the other person, but it is for you. When you hold on to anger and you hold on to the negative emotions that impact you because of the other person or the triggering event, you will never get over it. And I asked the people in our group, how many times do you think that they're actually even thinking about the thing that they did to you? Yet how many times do you think about it? How many times does it affect you daily where those memories come up and then they trigger you and then it affects your mood and then it affects your behavior? How many times do you think it affects them? But how many times does it affect you? And so I gave this example. We have an event, or maybe it's a person that we see, something triggering, and then we have a response. And then whatever our response is from that event or that triggering activity is the outcome that we get. And when we times this by multiple things that happen a day, this is our life. As an example, if you saw a person you didn't want to forgive, and then your response is anger, resentment, bitterness, anxiety, then the outcome might be that you're now stuck in the fight or flight or even freeze, and then you feel unwell and your day is ruined. You could see how then you quickly go into the polyvagal theory of fight or flight or freeze. And so I argue that what we need to do, what we need to work on, is that we need to change our response. If you choose to forgive, you see the person that you forgiven, and then the response is that you just don't care. You see them, lack of care, there's more apathy. And then the outcome is that your day is not affected by that person. Your emotion and physical health is intact. And so you can stay in the social engagement or the place that you can have joy and connection with others, release oxytocin with your loved ones, which is an endorphin to make you feel better. And then you can just go about your day, not letting the person that wronged you take up that free space in your mind. Again, I know it's hard to forgive. And that's why we created this whole program of how to do these steps. But it's something to consider if you are harboring negative feelings and you're harboring negative hurts that have affected you in the past. I can assure you that while your mind might not think about it every single day, everything that you put under the rug, you're storing it because the body keeps the score. There are a group of people that believe that autoimmune can occur because we are not setting proper boundaries. Maybe in our family, we took the role of caretaker. So our needs became secondary to everyone else's needs. And that's the role that we ended up taking. So sometimes autoimmune then can happen because trust me, when you are the person that gets dumped on for everything, you will be in a constant fight or flight because you're trying to protect everyone from dying or getting really negatively affected. So you protect everyone from the world, but no one is protecting you. And so oftentimes those people, the type A, the caretakers, are the ones that end up getting sick physically, mentally. And it is that maybe their bodies then start getting sick or get an autoimmune. So they're forced to create the boundary or forced to allow themselves to finally have the self-care they need, but can't vocalize. I would say to take a pause and think about your own life. If you are suffering from chronic illness, are you the caretaker? And could it be that you have let all of your needs and priorities go to the wayside, and now you are forced to take care of your health, yet you are still playing the role of the caretaker? These are things that you should think about if you are not healing from your chronic illness. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this section, but I just wanted to touch this book. It's not perfect. I really like this book though, because it talks about the expectation effect. So David Robson really tries to bring home that our expectation shapes our reality. So for example, if a person expects a medication to reduce their pain, their brain will release natural pain relieving chemicals such as endorphins, dynorphins, endogenous cannabinoids such as anandamide, serotonin, GABA, and it leads to actual pain relief. It's a little bit of that placebo effect. So what happens if we think we're sensitive to a supplement, or for sure that meat will make me react, or for sure this will make me sensitive? Do you think that if you eat something, you'll have a histamine release? I'm not saying that everything is emotional, but I am saying that could some of your perception be causing the self-fulfilling prophecy to happen? Because studies show that the placebo effect or even the nocebo effect is very real. So a nocebo effect is when there's really nothing that would adversely happen to you, but because you believe it's adverse, it will happen. So when you read a horrible long list of side effects from a drug, you have a higher chance of actually reacting because you've already read and basically prompted your limbic system to say, watch out for these things. And then you look at it and then you will react. There was a story about pain. Henry Beecher, he was an American anesthesiologist, and he talked about the power of placebo. He served at the end of World War II in Italy and France, and he had to treat a lot of really bad wounds. What was fascinating about the story was his nurse, they were in short supply of morphine, and so they had to undergo surgery without it. So Beecher's nurse would inject saline solution and then tell the soldiers they were getting morphine. And then 90% of the soldiers felt the effect as if it was a real drug. So just the belief that there was morphine in their pain medications, these people felt 90% efficacy with water saline injections. So if you think about that, what does that mean when we feel like we will be chronically ill? I think this sums up a lot of what I'm sharing. So we have 50 to 70,000 spontaneous thoughts, ideas per day, and they use 100 billion neurons, which connect 500 trillion points through synapses. That's all the stuff that we're talking about with the limbic system, with the brain wirings, how we're on autopilot. The negative beliefs are more sticky and are remembered more easily. It's part of the self-protective mechanism. It's a negativity bias. It's our limbic system helping us stay protected. So the belief of I'm never going to get better. Carnivore diets don't work for me. No diets work for me. Mold is everywhere. I will never heal. I will forever be struggling with X. All of these thoughts, if you were to take a second and you actually sat down and asked these questions to yourself and then really asked, do you think you can get better? Do you feel you could ever heal? And if you've never thought you can heal, I don't know if you ever will. Because how can your brain imagine a future that you yourself have never really imagined? And so of all these 50 to 70,000 spontaneous thoughts, there's only 6,000 active ones that we see per day. And so the goal of limbic system retraining and using the benefits of neuroplasticity to help mold our brains differently to benefit us, to heal us, to find a different way to work or to get back into the beach. These things are so pivotal for healing and to living your best life. And so of those 6,000 thoughts, the goal is to be able to change some for positive. And so the question with you, with your illness, with whatever you are struggling with in your life is when you see a bee, do you see it as death? And then all the negative 50 to 70,000 spontaneous thoughts and 100 billion neurons, is that what is triggered in your mind? Or is it that you see a bee and you're like, it brings really sweet stuff like honey? And then do you have hundreds of billions of neurons in your system releasing happy thoughts? And then think about that polyvagal theory. Do you think the guy on the right, the guy with the death in his head, is in the free state? And then the woman is in the joy or the social engagement state? And you could see that if the bee was how you perceive the world every single day, do you think the guy on the right is going to heal or the girl on the left? And these are the questions that we must ask ourselves every single day, whether we're doing a carnivore diet, whether we're trying to heal from SIRS, mold, Lyme, tick bites, vector illnesses, environmental illnesses, MCAS, histamines. Are we viewing the world as the bee that gives us a toxin or a bee that gives us the option for honey? And that is where ultimately so much of your healing can be impacted. Some of the studies I didn't touch upon was that there were instances where people that were in rehabilitation, when they planned their day ahead, they wrote it down and they envisioned a way that they would heal, that they were the ones that healed so much faster than the people that were just on rehabilitation and said, I know I'm going to heal. It is a big difference because your brain does not know the difference between when you perceive something and when you view something. So imagine if you're always perceiving that you will heal, that your life looks like this in the future, that you will be able to run and not be affected by mold as much or eating certain foods that are a little bit more processed, that you won't get as affected. Your brain does everything it can then to meet that reality.
Hey
Hey guys, just to let you know, my Carnivore Cure book is back in stock. For 9 months, it was out of print and used prices were up to $300. Make sure to get your copy today that has over 200 colored tables and graphics and over 400 pages of meaty goodness. We have a limited supply, so get your copy today on Amazon.com. And if you can leave a review, I'd be super grateful. But if you've never imagined a future that's better than you are today, I assure you, your brain is not working towards a future. I want you guys to be the person that looks at the bee and then imagines honey. This is not a conversation about fructose, so that is besides the point. So one example we share in our program is this cognitive reframing journal. I think you guys can see how it works, but it is so powerful in basically changing our emotions and our feelings. What we're really trying to get at with an example like this is, how do we change our gut knee-jerk reaction to an instance, then believing it's true, and then responding the rest of the day as if that was a fact, and then it ruining our day? If you don't like the outcome, you have to change the response. And the response can be so many things. In this particular section, it was the neuroplasticity tools, like changing your thoughts, using reframing, using that journal we just talked about. There's many other responses you can have, but the goal is so that your outcome changes. We also talk a lot about families and how if you don't like the family outcome, you can change that by changing your response. So here's some stories of people that changed their response. Albert Einstein wasn't able to speak until he was 4 years old. Jim Carrey was homeless as a child. Franklin Roosevelt was paralyzed at age 39 from an illness. Beth Hamilton was age 13 and she lost her arm to a shark attack. She was a surfboarder and she loved being in the beach. And her limbic system most likely told her, never go in the water again. It is not worth it. It is not worth going in the water where you would get hurt. But instead, within a month, she was back in the water. And then just in 2 years, she won the first place in NSSA national championships, which is even difficult for people that have all their limbs. So again, if you don't like the outcome, change the response. If you are going into a carnivore diet and believing all diets don't work for me, I assure you, carnivore diet won't work for you. If you believe that every program you do does not work for you, I assure you, no program will work for you. And then we could say that with marriages, relationships, jobs, events, friendships, protocols, diets. It is everything and anything that you perceive of the world. How is that affecting you? And then how is it affecting your body? You cannot fix your way out of an illness. We see that all the time. You cannot fix yourself out of a tick bite, or you cannot fix yourself out of moldy environment, but you can do some support by strengthening the body, which also means strengthening the mind. How do you view the world? If you wake up and you look at the world and you're thinking, oh, I have back pain, I have joint pain, I'm fatigued, I'm tired, I barely want to get up, I'm just going to scroll through my phone, or I'm just going to do the easiest thing to get dopamine hits, and then you're already in this negative spin, then it becomes easier to think of all the negative things that are constantly occurring. And again, you have 50,000 thoughts that you are not even aware of. And so everything that happens that day, then it can be a snowball effect of everything being negative. Whereas if you wake up in the day, you look at the sun, you go out and take a walk, or you do something that brings you joy, whether it's listening to music, reading scripture, doing something that fills yourself with joy and love, imagine how then you proceed for the rest of the day. If you don't like your outcome, change the response. If you are constantly sick and every single day, all you do is go online and look for the next best answer for your illness, guess what you're doing? All you're doing is pinging your brain to realize everything in your life has only to do with that illness, whether it's a VOC, and all you do is ping your brain to be hyper aware of all the VOCs that you're being affected by. And all the 50,000 thoughts will now support you to look for all the VOCs that you're not even aware of. There was a person that used to work in an office and was starting to get sick. She wasn't sure what was happening. She went to a doctor because she felt really sensitive. Her doctor eventually found that across the wall from her office, they had a lot of VOCs, certain types of chemicals, organic compounds that were making her sick. So then at night, because she didn't trust her doctor, because she didn't trust standard care, She said, I am going to be my own advocate, and started searching and searching and searching, scrolling through all this content to learn and understand. And then she started learning, like, wow, there are so many other different types of VOCs. Eventually, from all the research, her brain got so triggered and stressed by all of the things that she was pinging in her brain that guess what happened? Eventually, she couldn't even walk down the street because the dryer sheet smells that were blowing out of homes were affecting her, when before it never did. So she would have to walk around with the full headed mask to be able to even walk around. And I know that's a more extreme example, but how much is your research and your desire to support yourself almost making you live in your illness or exacerbating your illness? How many times are you pinging your brain with things that are may not be beneficial? If you've watched all of my content, there are several videos where I say stop watching social media content and content for wellness, because at a certain point, it could actually be an adverse thing for you. So I want to leave this discussion with, have you really thought that you can heal? And have you ever thought a diet can heal you, or a protocol can, or a program, or a practitioner? And if you've never thought it can actually happen for you, it could be a reason or a partial reason why you're not fully healing. And if you're surrounded by a bunch of negative Nancys or tiring Toms, then it is also time to cut those people from your life, maybe even temporarily. You have to be in a place where you want to heal. Even if an event happens or a trigger happens, your goal is to change your response. If you don't like the outcome, you have to change the response. If you think about the polyvagal theory, get to the place of social engagement where your immune system is as robust as it can be. Your digestion is optimal, so then you could start assimilating the nutrients that your body so needs to support the immune system. And then you could start living your life and not having to listen to any nutritional and wellness content. Sometimes we are our worst enemy. And I just want you to take a moment and think about, are you supporting yourself or are you hurting yourself unintentionally? And this is where the mind-body work is so important. We never create things unless our practice needs it. And we consistently find we have the most diligent clients and patients. And whether it's the carnivore diet, whether it's SIRS protocol, whether it's a Lyme herbal challenge, we find things where people are not moving the needle enough. And a big component we find is that they are emotionally mind-body stuck. And our goal is to help you see the light, see the reasons why you're stuck, see the events, as some people don't even know what these events are, so that they could truly start healing and taking back their life and being back in control to really start healing and thriving. Because we truly deserve to live this best life. One that, whether you believe in God or not, that God is giving you to live to your full potential and then give the gifts to others that he has given you. Now, I know that everyone cannot join our mind-body program, nor is this really an ad for our mind-body program anyway. But if you are unsure of where to start, you can start that Expectation Effect book. You can read the book Chatter. I think that's a great book as well. There are many things you could do for free that doesn't cost a lot, as long as you are committed. This is the harder way to get dopamine. This is the harder way to go to work or tell yourself that something is not scary anymore, or to forgive someone when you don't want to. But when you do this hard work, it can actually make a big difference for you to get your life back. I was requested to bring up why the mind-body matters so much. I hope that this conversation really helps let it sink in so that it makes sense of maybe it's a tool that you need to actually get to root cause healing and then to live your best life. All right, guys, make sure to eat a lot of meat, take care of your bodies and your minds, because it's the only place you have to live. I will talk to you later. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening to the Nutrition with Judy podcast. If you liked what you heard today, please make sure to leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app so more listeners like you can find the show. If you want more practitioner care and support, head over to nutritionwithjudy.com/groups so you can get more real talk about carnivore, the environment, and root cause healing. You can also find my content on Nutrition with Judy's YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Make sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter and learn more about in-depth articles with infographics at nutritionwithjudy.com/articles. You can find my two books, Carnivore Cure and The Complete Carnivore Diet for Beginners, on carnivorecure.com and amazon.com. At the heart of Nutrition with Judy's practice, our mission lies with a deep, unwavering passion for service and community. We will continue to empower you to have the knowledge and tools to live a life nearly symptom-free, because we firmly believe in healing and wellness for all.